It's a movement, but it's about people. Be the People is about we the people joining forces to reclaim and reshape the best of our nation's time-treasured traditions. Each week, we offer insightful interviews with movers and shakers from all different spheres of life. And now, please welcome Dr. Carol Swain.
If you've been watching the news over the past week, and in fact, it goes back much longer than a week, the narrative of the political left has been for some time now that President Trump is a racist, he's a white nationalist, he's responsible for increased violent attacks in America. And so whether we're talking about Charlottesville or the El Paso attack that took place earlier in August, we know that there has been a steady drum from the political left about the president, about his character, about his white supporters. Joining me today to make sense of all of this is someone who knows President Trump quite well. And this is my friend, Evangelist Avita King. Avita King is a civil rights leader, a political commentator, and she's director of Civil Rights for the Unborn. And so she's been in the trenches for a long time, fighting for civil rights, fighting for the unborn, and she's also worked closely with the president. And so let's welcome Avita King to the Be the People show and let her share with us what she knows about President Trump from being around the man up close.
Well, hello, Dr. Swain. This is Evangelist Avita King, but let's be Avita and Carol as we often are when we are praying together and working together and in the trenches together. I'm so glad to join you on this Blog Talk station. I like that theme, be the people. We the people must be the people. I want you to know that I just absolutely just appreciate that title of your show.
Well, it is about trying to motivate the American people. We have our Constitution, but our Constitution and our Bill of Rights, it is of no use to us if we don't stand up and claim our rights. And that preamble is what empowers the we the people. And so, yeah, that whole idea of be the people is to encourage the American people to stand up and take their place.
Right. We the people of the United States of America, in order to form a more perfect union. And we recognize that we are together endowed by our Creator with certain inalienable, or does it say unalienable, rights. And those are to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And that's not conditional on skin color or socioeconomic condition or your physical health or any of those things. Just we the people. You know, we were in a workshop recently, not so long ago in the spring, and I brought to the table the concept that we are one blood and one human race. And that's scientific evidence, in fact, and the Bible say that of one blood, God made all people to live together on the face of the earth. So that means as red-blooded human beings, we are one human race. And that's, Carol, I believe that that's part of the problem with this socially engineered concept of racism and separate skin colors make you a different race. And then people begin to become emotional. Somebody's got to be the superior. Somebody's got to be the victim and all of that. So I know that you ran a race recently, a heavily contested race, and you stood very well as a woman, as an African-American, of course, but as a person who is prepared, equipped, and ready to serve. That's the kind of thing that we're going to have to look forward to as we move on, even into the 2020 elections. We're going to have to look at those candidates because they're capable, not skin color, not pocketbook, not how much money they could spend on ads, but what are they really going to do? Are they going to be the leader and help the people be the people?
Well, you know, what I found from running for office is that money seems to determine outcomes, because in my particular race, I was in the number two position, and there would have been a runoff that I would have been in, But then the candidate who ultimately came in number one, who will be in the runoff, these are two men from political dynasties. One's grandfather was a mayor of Nashville, the first mayor ever of metropolitan Nashville. And the other candidate's father was a three-term governor, and his brother is a congressman. They're both liberal Democrats. But at the end of the day, it's about money that controls where the message can reach. And so that was part of my experience.
And that's a genuine experience. And what we are having to do, we saw in the last election, though, I believe that candidate Hillary Clinton outspent President Trump, but he did have a heavy bankroll himself. He had a lot of financial support. And so these races really are run on money first, and that's unfortunate. But when you look at that, you still have to do, and that's what they did not do in your race, is to look at the qualifications, look at the candidates, and look at the sincerity and ability to serve the people. And so going into 2020, for example, we know that voter registration is important, getting your base registered to vote. And that old-fashioned way that was good for me in the 1970s when I ran for the state house in Georgia. And there were several candidates in the race too, but I actually was advised to knock on doors during the summer myself. I knocked in on a little over 700 doors, and I had my brochure, and I said, I'm Alveda King Beale at the time. I'm divorced now. But I knocked on the door, left my brochure, asked people for a donation. They gave me a dollar back then, which would be the equivalent of about $20 today, that type of contribution. So what we want to encourage people to do, even though it sometimes can look very challenging, get out there, get your base registered, get your base voted, have people look at principles that are very, very important. And that's the economy, definitely the safety of our nation, the safety of our communities, the sanctity of life, the babies in the womb after they're born, when they grow up, whether they get poor or sick, when they get old, but caring for human beings all the way through. And that's going to be very, very important as well. So even if your candidate has more money and they can buy bigger ads, that's not the only reason that you should be voting for that candidate. You should be out doing your homework, listeners, and finding out what they really are about.
I agree. And I hope that more people would do that in the next election, and that we always have choice, so that all the candidates are not people that are on the same page ideologically, that there be at least one person that has a different viewpoint on some of the issues affecting the country.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's something I've always wanted to ask you. I have been watching you as a leader through the years. We met mutually through some friends in the conservative camp, but you have been able, as a professor, an esteemed college professor, to teach students from all walks of life and to be very successful with that. And I noticed that you are respected. Even millennials look to you as a mentor. So even though I believe you are retired now from your professorship,
yes,
but you're still an author, you're still writing, you're still mentoring young people. What kind of advice do you have for the young people of today in America, Carol?
Not to give up, because a lot of times I think that people look at what they see on the media, such as the bruising conservatives are taking right now, especially those that are white, where they're being assailed constantly, being called names. And it discourages them from even wanting to go to college. And it's important for people, if you're going to be able to have a certain impact in society, some people have to go to college. We don't all have to go to college. There are many other careers that don't require a college degree, but some of us have to go to college. Some of us have to go to law school. And I think that conservatives, youth, you know, they look at people like me, and hopefully we encourage them to stay in the battle. And I meet lots of young people who have not given up, and they are working in student organizations, sometimes they're Christian organizations, sometimes they're conservative organizations like Young America's Foundation, where they can meet with like-minded youth. But they're determined, you know, to change our society to at least maintain some of those Judeo-Christian values and principles that we know have been the bedrock of our nation.
May I ask you if it's okay with you? I have 6 children, as you know. How many children do you have?
I have 2 sons, and I have 5 grandchildren and a great-grandson named Hezekiah.
Okay. Well, I've got 6 living children and 2 aborted and 1 miscarriage. And before we wrap up in about, you know, towards the end of it, we can talk about that. But
take a break now.
It's your news and entertainment network. News blogs, informative podcasts, entertaining videos, or listen to 24/7 talk radio on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We the People, AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
We're back with Dr. Avita King, who's an evangelist. Whether we like it or not, the conversation that's been dominating the media, mainstream media, has been around the president. And there have been many accusations, not only calling him a racist, but also calling his followers racist. And in America, we also face this situation where the country is becoming majority-minority. It's already happened in many states and cities, and that'll be the nation as a whole in a few years. And so we are on entirely new territory when it comes to race relations.
Well, you're right about that. And as I say, people know that I'm a Fox News contributor. And I do my own responses. I pray. I ask the Lord. And I come to the same conclusion that to stir that race pot, to stir it up, to stir up the emotions of people, to get people arguing about racism, which is socially engineered. It's not real. We're not separate races. We're one race. That science and religion kind of say that. And so then if the people are so upset, especially in the case that you have candidates now who are expecting to run against President Trump in 2020, and they don't have to talk about issues. Like my daughter said, we need programs. We need solutions. We need situations that are going to make people's lives better. But if you don't have that, and the person that you're running against does have that, and has a proven track record of letting people out of jail and reuniting them with their families, nonviolent criminals especially, and bringing jobs back into the community, contributing money, big dollars, to historically black colleges and universities, working for the sanctity of life, taking money, tax dollars that have been paying for abortion providers. Monies are now beginning to go to people who do not provide abortions, but they provide a solution to a life problem that won't require abortion. So if you've got all of that in place and it's moving forward on a train that apparently is not being stopped, then all you can do is scream racism. And so that's what we really do have. And it's unfortunate. Now, I actually do, you said at the top of the show, I know President Trump. I really do. And I've been in his presence in small gatherings and large gatherings. I've had the opportunity to see him when he's working a crowd. He walks through and he shakes everybody's hand. And I don't know if this ever happened to you, but it has happened to me more than once in my lifetime because I'm African American and I've been in environments with white folks who actually were racist. And after I shook their hand, they would drop it to their side and wipe it off. They would wipe their hand off. And I said, what is that? And I had to have some people who were older than I was explain to me they don't want to touch black folks. So I'm telling you, Tom Murphy and Joe Frank Harris and all of them who are fine people as far as I'm concerned, but Tom Murphy was the Speaker of the House when I was a state legislator, and Joe Frank Harris later, he was a legislator, he became governor. But that was the days when they really were racist, and they did not want to pass the Martin Luther King holiday bill. Primarily, it was the men who, because they still had platoons in the state capitol then, they would take the bill, ball it up, throw it in the platoon, and spit tobacco on it. And so I remember I went into the speaker's office one day. All right, Ms. Albedo, what is it? And so I started crying. I was younger. I was much more vulnerable and all of that kind of thing. And I cried, Ms. Albedo, if you stop crying, I'll let the bill out of committee. Just stop crying, please. So I didn't fake. Those were not crocodile tears. They were tears of frustration. But later, these same men did kind of like what George Wallace did. If you remember, George Wallace was one of the most notorious racists in the history of America. And he was just absolutely terrible. He was shot towards the end of his life, and he was in a wheelchair, and he repented. And he said, I was wrong. My thinking was wrong. The way that I have treated people because of their skin color. I'm paraphrasing it, but you can find it. George Wallace repented.
Right. I'm very familiar with his story.
He repented. And now we see people, yeah, he's just like George Wallace. The people hear Wallace's name and don't remember that story and start screaming and hollering. Just like Colin Kaepernick went to Nike. I don't think he knew that Betsy Ross was an abolitionist fighting against slavery. You see? So I'm like, my goodness. When you don't have information, when you don't know the truth, and your emotions are raw because you've been oppressed, and you're buying into either being colorblind and you can't see color, which Jesus gives sight to the blind, or you're saying that we're separate races, then you're going to fight. Because somebody has to be the master, somebody has to be the victim, and that's what we have. And then, like my daughter said a few minutes ago, and I'm glad she did join us with that, we need people to deal, and that's what the young people are saying, why are you doing that? Even in Baltimore, the black people in Baltimore who are living in those conditions are speaking out saying, it is terrible. We do need help. And the man, the congressman could say that his area was infested, Congressman Elijah Cummings, but if President Trump says that he's a racist. So what does that make Cummings, who said it was infested? He could say as a victim, it's great. You could say it. You're a victim, you're oppressed, it's infested. But if somebody who wants to help change it says it's infested, he's a racist.
Well, I mean, with this president, the political left would do anything to discredit him. And that has been going on ever since the day he was elected. And it doesn't seem like it's going to change.
Well, I heard people, because I remember when Congressman Waters, we all heard it, he got it in the news, resist them, go into the restrooms, go into the restaurants. Go into wherever they are and just attack them and just tell them you don't like what they're doing. And so we've had some really horrendous attacks. President Trump at the front of that, taking the brunt of it, taking the major hits. But his supporters, as you said earlier, that's happening to us too. And it's outrageous. And to say you're racist, then that says the black folks, they're calling us racist. And worse, you know, we've been called other names too. And it is from the liberal side that will say, we are not content with this. We were supposed to win, and we are not gonna let you rest. So I think it's just incredibly outrageous. But one thing that we've forgotten to do in America on both sides is genuine, sincere prayers of repentance, and then ask God for guidance and get directions out of some of these messes. And so more of that has to happen.
The percentage of Americans who now profess Christianity, that seems to be on a steady decline. And so at one time we could confidently say that America was a Judeo-Christian country because, you know, something like 70 or 80% of the people believed in God, or they said they were Christians. Well, that number has just steadily dropped.
Well, you know, with Madeline O'Hare in 1963, had a son in school, and I think they wanted to pray or something in school, and she didn't want it, and she successfully had a law passed to take prayer out of school. So they invited God out of the school. God, of course, never leaves. Jesus said he'll never leave us or forsake us. But they pushed God away. And then in 73, made it legal to kill the babies in the womb.
I agree.
You do that. Take God out of school. Leave the children vulnerable. Teach them hypersexuality so they'll get pregnant. and then make abortion legal and say, come and let us help you, we'll abort your child. My goodness, that's by design. That's not accidental. And so that is what has happened to the Judeo-Christian values as well.
Okay. We're going to take a break, and when I return, I'd like for you to talk about the work that you're doing right now and then how people can support you.
There are speakers, and then there are great speakers who know the importance of creating that memorable moment. Well, the key to any successful event is an informative and inspirational speaker. Professor Dr. Carol Swain is that gifted speaker. She delivers passionately from the heart every time. To find out more about booking Carol for your next great event, simply go to carolmswain.com. Click on Public Speaking and then click the blue Book Carol tab.
I'm back with Evangelist Vita King, and we've been talking about race and various ideas, and also about President Trump and the accusations that he's a white nationalist and racism. And so let's, in the time remaining, talk with Evangelist King about the work that she's doing in America and how we might be able to help her.
Well, Dr. Carol, I do want to share that information with you, but there's one more point, and it is part of my work as well. I am on social media, and somehow, by a remarkable occurrence, I had over 1 million viewers on a tweet that I just said President Trump is not a racist. And people actually did weigh in. I got a lot of comments about that. So social media is important. It's a part of what I do. It's not all that I do. But I'm on Twitter and Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. I had to stop with the platforms from there. I think I just joined another platform called Zapit. And that's one that's more positive, where the folks don't do a lot of profanity and yelling at each other and all of that. So I'm really enjoying Zapit. That one is growing as well. So I publish, I speak, I advocate, I network, we deal with policy. And as a matter of fact, we're coming out with a policy statement at the end of the month. I don't want to reveal what it is, but Dr. Swain, you have agreed to allow me to reprint one of your articles in it, and I'm very excited to include that. So it's important, but I do want to say again to the millennials and to all of us, pastors are beginning to teach that now. Social media is important, but it should have its place. It should not consume us, where we're not getting our sleep, our exercise, our recreation, building real, genuine, human, hands-on relationships. So I have books. I have music albums. I'm working on films. I'm the executive director of the film Roe v. Wade. And some people recently, you may have gotten another note from me. We're in post-production, and now we've got to finish and complete our marketing budget. But we've worked very hard to say to America with that film how abortion became legal in America and why. And then we say to the viewers, you decide what you want to do about it now that you know how that this happened. I'm director of Civil Rights for the Unborn with Priests for Life, and I'm at civilrightsfortheunborn.org. My ministry link is alvitaking.com. So I'm a personality who works to bring about transformation to our culture, bring about unity and civility. And we are working very hard to get that done. And that's a basis not of our professional relationship. That's the basis of that. Our friendship, of course, is because we are mothers. We're African-American women. We've had to overcome much by raising children, sometimes alone. And that has been a challenge, but we are blessed now with children and grandchildren. We do support our families, our communities, our African-American men who are often under assault as well. And so these are the kinds of things that I do, and I'm glad to be a part of this movement with you, Dr. Swain.
Well, I certainly appreciate everything that you do in the world, and I'm always excited when I turn on national TV and I see you interviewed. You do a great job with those interviews, and we can all look forward to your book, and we'll stay tuned to hear more about it. And so I thank you, Avita, for being on the show, and I look forward to having you back on, and we'll be following you closely. And then after we post the show, we will put links to your website and links to your social media so that everyone else can find you as well.
Thank you, Carol. It's a wonderful thing that we can do that and share, and I look forward to many happy days ahead. Thank you so much, and God bless you.
And for the rest of you all, you know the sign-off. In America, it's we the people. We the people must be the people who stand up and change our nation and change our world. It's up to us to use the tools and gifts that we have to make a difference. Until next time.